Welcome back to the LGBTQ Plus STEM Podcast. This week's episode, we have Sarah Manning on to chat with us about all things maths. Sarah is an actuary from Belfast, Northern Ireland. As always, grab a coffee or listen in the car. Hope you enjoy this one. In 2019, in Indiana, in the United States, a kid rang up 911. His problem, he was struggling with his maths homework.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, I had a really bad day and I just have tons of homework.
Okay. What subject do you have homework in?
Math, and it's so hard.
Okay. So what are you learning in math? What's so difficult?
Fractions.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually bad at fractions.
You're bad at fractions?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a problem you want me to help you with?
Yeah, what's 3/4 plus 1/4?
So what's 3 + 1?
4.
Okay. And then what's, it would be over 4. So then 4/4 is what?
1.
Yeah, good job.
Thank you.
Right, so that was an extreme example of someone who feared maths. And just to be clear, we don't recommend calling 911 about a maths problem, but the fact is that most of us have struggled with maths before. And if you're like me, you might have said something along the lines of, I'm not a maths person, or I'm bad at maths. So today in the show, we'll be discussing some of the myths that we tell ourselves about maths, and hopefully by the end of the show, we'll have tested some of our commonly held assumptions about maths. I have a number of different maths advocates that I'm going to introduce throughout today's show. So here we go. Our first maths advocate is a woman called Felicia Jones. She's a former computer scientist for the US Navy. She left the Navy and now she focuses on encouraging young women into maths. She noticed that the kids who say that they are not good at maths are usually girls. She's a really good TED talk, and in that she says that 15 is usually the age when girls decide that they are not good at maths. So that was one question I wanted to put to Sarah, our guest speaker. I want to understand what circumstances were in place for her as a 15-year-old to know that she wanted a career in maths.
Yeah, I suppose it was a combination of things for me. I suppose I've always had an interest in problem solving. And later in my teens, I did realize that I had such a big interest and I got such satisfaction out of working through mathematical problems that it's where I wanted my career and my third level education to go down this route. I suppose the satisfaction that I would have got from solving problems, especially with maths being seen as a more challenging subject, and I would say for me, I definitely wasn't always top of my maths class. That was something that took time, and I think mathematics is something that can be learned similarly to a language, and that you can improve and become good at maths through training and perseverance. So I definitely got a lot of satisfaction from the improvement that I made when I applied myself in mathematics. I suppose as well, the culture in the school that I attended, there was emphasis put on STEM subjects. And luckily I was in an environment where it wasn't seen as too nerdy or uncool to be interested in science or mathematics. So I suppose that was definitely something that helped steer me towards a career in maths. It was probably actually the opposite. The school that I attended, you were seen as cool if you were good at these things and if you were academic and you succeeded. So I think that definitely helped.
Our second maths advocate is a woman called Katherine Johnson. She's from the United States, and when she was 15 years old, she was encouraged by her parents to pursue maths. And she ended up working as a mathematician to get America to the moon. So that's a really good example of what can happen if you encourage a young girl towards a career in maths. However, not everyone is going to turn into a mathematician. Instead, if we encourage young girls to enjoy maths, then they may choose a career in maths, or they may not. But eventually, if we make maths more fun and encourage more women into the area, then more women will begin careers in maths, technology, computer science, and any other maths-related field. And one of the conclusions that I made from the research that went into today's episode is that some people take to maths more easily, but everyone has a maths brain. And that's why we need to encourage students and not discourage them in terms of maths. I should also mention that many of the careers in mathematical fields right now are essentially running our worlds. And what I mean by that is that these workers and decision makers in the maths and sciences field are largely male. So for example, science and engineering are very male dominated, and that can really change how we interact with the subjects and careers. And if a young girl doesn't see female mathematicians, then it can be really hard for a young girl to see themselves as a future mathematician or a future scientist. And that's why it's so important for the 15-year-old girl who decides that she's not good at maths to reevaluate and rewire how she thinks about maths and to try and encourage her within the area. So I wanted to identify what contextual factors were in place for Sarah. So as a 15-year-old, what contextual factors were in place for her to choose a career in maths? And in this sense, a contextual factors could mean she might have been inspired for a career in maths because of some family members or a teacher or a mathematical pioneer that inspired her towards a career in mathematics.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I think back to my childhood and the types of things that I was interested in, you know, I would definitely say that my grandfather played a big role in that. He was definitely a problem solver and the type of person that could kind of put his hand to anything. And there was no problem too big or too small. And he was very handy, and he would have been fixing things around the house all the time. And I was very close to him, so I would have been watching him, you know, figuring out the answer or coming up with solutions for things, whether it was in the house or whether it was, you know, some other sort of problem within the family. In relation to anything, really, he was always the person that you could go to. So I suppose he was a role model for me in that way. And I wanted to be the person with the answers too. So yeah. I used to kind of follow him around and I'll watch him work through things and, you know, probably cause more of a hindrance than a help, but I suppose that's where I really got a passion for solving problems, you know, which is really what anyone who works in the field of STEM or mathematics is involved in. So yeah, I suppose that was definitely a big influence for me.
Oh, I love that story. And how about any teachers or anything like that?
In terms of teachers, I actually had kind of the opposite experience. Instead of someone, you know, inspiring me, I actually had a teacher who tried to sway me away from going down the mathematical path. Which is very unfortunate. And look, maybe that wasn't her intention, but I suppose when I was at school, and I went to school in Belfast, so I did GCSEs and A-levels. And when I picked my GCSEs when I was around 14, I didn't select advanced maths at the time, so I didn't take an ad maths GCSE. And then I really grew to really enjoy the normal maths GCSE, and I decided that I wanted to take it further and do my A-level maths. And yeah, I turned up in this teacher's A-level maths class and she kind of asked me what I was doing there. yeah, she said, you know, because I hadn't taken advanced maths, I kind of had no chance of getting an A in my A-level, which is a requirement to get into the actuarial degree that I wanted to get into. So you know, basically from day one, she told me I was in the wrong classroom, and yeah, I had no chance basically. So I suppose that was discouraging in a way. well, not in a way, it just is discouraging. you know, a blow to the confidence. But I suppose I was lucky that I had other people around me and other teachers.
Yeah.
That were very encouraging and, you know, told me to use it, I suppose, as an inspiration to do better and to prove her wrong. So I suppose that's what happened in the end. But yeah, unfortunate, you know, I had other support systems and I was able to react well to that sort of discouragement, you know.
Yeah. But
of course, not everyone may have that. So I think everyone should be given the chance to prove themselves as opposed to being told they're in their own classroom on day one, you know.
Yeah, and it was lucky, the type of person that you are as well, that you were driven as well and seemed to be a bit confident at that age, but also that you had the support network around you. So a lot of people wouldn't have that. A lot of young kids wouldn't have that. So it worked out good for you, thankfully.
Yeah. And I suppose in hindsight, that probably... if I ever run in there, I should probably say thanks.
Yeah, send her a Christmas card or something.
Our third advocate is a man called Dan Finkel. Dan has a PhD in maths, and he tells the story about when he was younger, he went to a maths camp. And he surprised himself because he found the camp really fun and enjoyable. And what made it fun was that the camp attendees were given a lot of time to try and answer the questions, and there wasn't a huge focus on getting the right answer. When he got older, he went on to study maths, but he found that the experience that he had at the maths camp, it wasn't there at secondary school or university. And after graduation, he ended up teaching maths at a secondary school. And during that time, he noticed that there was a big problem with the way maths is taught. So he became concerned at the way we promote this limiting view of thinking about maths as this static body of facts rather than experience that you can learn from. So he took this problem that he saw while he was teaching and he went on to get a PhD in maths education. So he talks about changing the way we view maths. And some people might think he's watering down maths by implementing this experience-based approach, but his argument is that an experience-based approach to maths is similar to what mathematicians actually do on a daily basis. So for any parents and teachers listening, he offers 5 principles for rethinking the approach to maths, which I won't get into now, but I just wanted to mention it for anyone that wants to look into it further. And what I personally found really interesting about his views, and I found them very relatable, is that it's not uncommon for students to leave secondary school believing that every maths problem can be solved in 30 seconds or less. And if you don't get the right answer in maths, that then you're not a maths person. So he says that in itself, that is a failure of the educational system. And he argues that rightness and wrongness does matter in maths. He says it's fundamental in maths to be able to understand what is the right answer and what is the wrong answer. But he says that the maths educational system is currently obsessed with getting the right answers within a really short time frame. And he believes that even more important is understanding how the student currently thinks about maths, how they understand the question, how they understand the process to getting the right answer. And he concludes that maths shouldn't feel intimidating. So as a teacher, you shouldn't have a classroom where maths is intimidating and that the student feels that this is a subject that belongs to someone else or this is a subject that belongs to someone smarter than me. And he strongly recommends in creating a classroom environment that allows the student to get the answer wrong. And once the student can get the answer wrong and that they feel that it's okay to get the answer wrong, then as a teacher, then you can begin to work from that instead of a huge focus and an obsession over getting that answer right.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I think back to the way I was taught maths, it was all very theoretical. I'm sure most people can relate to that. It was all very much a blackboard and exercises. And yeah, look, it can be boring at times, I suppose. Maybe because I did my kind of own research and again influenced from my grandfather on how maths can actually be applied, that I could kind of see the bigger picture. But Yeah, you know, I think practical examples. I think, you know, a lot of people go through school and learn maths and kind of think, oh, when am I ever going to use this? You know, they can't mm-hmm. see that it's the basis and the foundation for so many other things, be it the solvency of a company, you know, software that you're using on your mobile phones, on your desktop computers, airplanes taken off the ground, you know, mm-hmm. everything that we use today is technology. You know, our TVs are basically computers now. There's algorithms running in the background, similarly with cars. So it's really everywhere. And, you know, I think there's a great opportunity there actually to make mathematics such an exciting subject, because yeah. it can be related to anything, but unfortunately it can still be taught in such a traditional and unfortunately unexciting and uninspiring way.
Our fourth maths advocate is a guy called Edward Kint Wu. He is an Australian secondary school teacher and he does these online maths lessons which are on YouTube. What I like about this guy is he addresses the most fundamental aspect of education, and that is showing the student why a subject should matter to them. In research, we call it the so what question. And a fundamental aspect of teaching any subject, not just maths, is that the student has every right to come into the classroom and ask the educator, why am I learning this? And it's the responsibility of me as a university lecturer or any teacher to be able to answer that question. And Edward Kint Wu talks about a question a lot of students ask in his classroom. And that is, do I really need maths in my everyday life? So for example, if a teacher comes into the classroom and asks the students to find X and Y excerpts of an equation, as a 15-year-old or any student, it's a valid question. And Edward Wu reminds the students that maths is just so much more than about numbers. He explains where the word maths comes from, and literally it just means understanding. So for example, biology is the study of living things, chemistry is the study of substances, and material physics is the study of matter and movement. But mathematics is the study of patterns, which are literally everywhere in our everyday lives. And one of the questions he asked back to the students is, well, what is the consequence of not understanding maths? So he gives them individual and societal examples for how understanding maths matters to them, or should matter to them. And he tells the student that our world is built on and is run by algorithms, and these have been mathematically designed by people, and these are usually hidden from our view. So as a society, we love social media, and when we're scrolling through our social media, we're not thinking that there is mathematics happening underneath. Or when you order something online, there's a recommended list for you. That's based on an algorithm which is all being completed by a maths formula, and these end up influencing your spending. So he gives the student examples for how those mathematicians are influencing your decision making, and he shows them real world instances as to what can happen when you have a mathematically illiterate general population. So he always refers back to the negative consequences of the students not understanding maths in your day-to-day life, and he recommends encouraging this type of discussion in a maths class.
As I became a teenager and got a bit more of an understanding of where mathematics is used in life, I got interested in the application of mathematics, and particularly the power of problem solving and mathematical thinking within business and finance. Yeah, and I suppose I was also quite aware of the career prospects from being good at maths. You know, I started my actuarial mathematics degree in 2009, and I suppose at that stage, maths was really moving towards the forefront in terms of technology and really the world that we're in the noughties. In terms of the use of mathematics in different areas of our lives, you know, social mm-hmm. media, content, coding, advertising, finance, risk modeling. So I suppose I seen it as an important subject too, which which probably encouraged me to really get involved and kind of go down that career path.
Our fifth MATS advocate is the current director of outreach for the Russian School of MATS, and her name is Masha Gershman. So the Russian School of MATS is an after-school MATS enrichment program for under 12 kids. They argue that MATS isn't a collection of concepts or skills, it's actually a tool of mental development, and everything that they do and how they teach the kids really stems from that. So this is actually a really cool story for how they founded the school. So the basic idea was that the Russian School of MATS was founded in the US by Marsha's mother, Inesha. And the idea behind it came from Inesha's own experience growing up in Russia. So from the 1950s to the 1980s, her parents were growing up in the Soviet Union in the midst of the space age. And the Soviets needed to grow a generation of minds who could out-innovate and out-create the United States. So a core belief in Soviet culture was that a student's potential is not predetermined, and that instead the Soviets believed that a mind could be developed. So they believed that the child's mind could be developed. So a range of different Soviet acclaimed mathematicians, psychologists and scientists began to build a new system of education that would develop the future minds who could thrive in the world of the unknown. And what these academics uncovered is that MATS is actually the best tool to serve that development. So once they understood that, the next question that they needed to ask was, well, how can you teach MATS in such a way that a child could look at a problem in which the concepts and skills or techniques involved in the problem were unclear, and how could they approach it? And they suggested that students should approach it like a puzzle. And during this time, MATS became really popular for kids, and any of the students who ended up winning the MATS Olympics were the rock stars in Russia. So essentially, MATS ended up being cool during this time. So fast forward a little bit, and Inesha immigrated to the United States, and she found it really strange that the people in America would openly admit that they were bad at MATS. And she ended up getting a job in Boston, and she came home from work one evening, and her son had to add two fractions together, and he couldn't. He refused to do so. And he was telling her that he wasn't good at maths, that there were other boys in his class that were better than him, and he refused to go through the problem with her. So she left her job and she started the Russian School of Maths with another teacher. We know that there is a need to get more women into maths related fields, and there is also a need to get more LGBTQ plus women into maths related fields. So one of the questions I wanted to ask Sarah was, what was it like for her coming out?
So I was 17 when I came out. Being open about my sexuality coincided with, I suppose, making important decisions about the type of subjects that I wanted to study and the direction that I wanted my education and ultimately my career to go in. So that was challenging, I suppose. Coming out at any time is unfortunately still challenging for people in our society today. But I suppose at 17, you know, you're already going through the normal challenges of being a teenager, and yeah, I suppose the emotional impact of kind of, you know, having to come out and unfortunately people gossiping about you or being shocked by it, and just the emotional turmoil of that. But I suppose, you know, I also like to look at the positive side, and the positive side of being a gay woman. You know, I think for many women, we're socialized from an early age to go down a certain path. And, you know, back to what I was saying earlier about problem solving and how you learn to problem solve and how you learn the importance of it and critical thinking, and how my grandfather was such a big role model for me in that. And I think sometimes girls are kind of disadvantaged in building those skills from the word go, when you think about the type of toys that were, you know, stereotypically the girls are given as children, and they're not as challenging and they're not as stimulating as some of the traditional toys that that boys would be given. So I think one of the positive sides for me really of being gay and, you know, being in a classroom that was mainly boys, I think was that I was always kind of different, and, you know, being in a class of all boys or not doing things that were stereotypically seen as feminine was something that I kind of had experienced through my whole life anyway. So I think it wasn't such a challenge for me, you know, being a gay 17-year-old in a Catholic Belsen grammar school, you know, you're already not exactly, well, you're not fitting in, like, are you, you know, and that's fine, and I came to be comfortable with not fitting in. So I think therefore going into a class that it was predominantly male, and maybe guys who were aspiring to go into engineering degrees or you know, computer science degrees and things like that, that it wasn't as big of a deal as me for me, just because of the experiences that I'd already had at that age.
For those of you who enjoy this episode, I would encourage you to listen to the Junior Cycle Talks podcast. So have a look at episode 4 with Yvine Houlavon. Yvine is a brilliant maths advocate. I'm also going to include a list of Irish mathematical women in the show notes, so just remember to have a look at those if you want to look at any inspiring mathematical women.